Welcome to our Bible study on the Gospel of Luke, chapter 16, verses 1 through 13. As always, I am assuming you have read the passage, that you have your Bible open before you, and that you understand our translations may not agree. I also want to invite you to our in-person Bible study on Wednesday evenings from 5:15 until 6 p.m. at the church in the Fellowship Hall. Pretty much this entire chapter is devoted to teaching about how we deal with wealth. If you are familiar with the Gospel of Luke, then you know that this is a primary concern, not only in Jesus' teaching, but also as early as the preaching of John the Baptist in chapter 3, verse 10 through 14, and as late as the church in Acts chapter 2, verse 43 through chapter 6, verse 7. This chapter essentially consists of two parts, each centered on parables found only in Luke. Our passage about the dishonest steward, and later the parable about the rich man and Lazarus. And both parables begin with the phrase, "There was a rich man." In verses 1 through 2, we see that Jesus is addressing this parable to the disciples. The steward, or manager, is being called in to give an account because he has squandered or wasted the owner's possessions or property, which echoes the parable right before this one in chapter 15, verse 11 through 32, about a son who squandered his father's property. In both instances, even though their actions are reprehensible, they end up being the recipients of grace. We may find a point of identification in the current climate change crisis. God created and called us to be stewards of God's creation. We are not the owners. And certainly a case could be made that we have squandered the opportunity to properly care for the planet. Although we think of the gospel as centering on grace, judgment is also involved, and judgment is a theme that occurs 36 times in the book of Luke and Acts. At verse 3, we witness an internal dialogue, similar to what we saw with the prodigal son in chapter 15, verse 17 through 19. And in both cases, the dialogues lift up the sincerity of the person, since the internal speech is not posturing before others, but is heard only by us, the readers. Other examples of internal dialogue can be seen at chapter 12, verse 17 through 21, with the rich fool, and chapter 18, verse 4 and 5, with the unrighteous judge. In this case, the quandary is that he is guilty of mismanagement. On this point, there is no debate, and the judgment is inevitable. He is going to lose his job, which causes the crisis, because he considers it impossible to do manual labor or beg from others. At verse 4, he voices that he has decided what he will do, so he will not be out in the street. But that course of action is not named or explained here. We are left in suspense, and curiosity builds as the steward proceeds with his plan. At verses 5 through 7, we are told what the steward has decided to do as he puts his plan into action. The steward calls in the debtors and reduces their debt. Apparently, the owner's debtors are unaware that the steward is about to lose his position, or maybe has already lost his position. And as far as they know, the actions are legitimate. The situation presumed by the story suggests that the owner has lent out his land to tenants who have agreed to pay him a fixed return in grain or oil. The substantial amounts indicate that the steward's mismanagement is no mere trifle. This was not a matter of individual households, but of commercial transactions. The first debtor owes 100 baths, the Greek word is bathos, of oil. Since a bath is equal to 9 gallons, this man owes 900 gallons of oil. And of course, the assumption is that it is olive oil and not motor oil. Now, the second debtor owes 100 cores, the Greek word is koros, of grain. Estimates of the size of a core vary from 6.5 to 10 to 12 bushels. And Josephus, the Jewish historian of the time, is not consistent as to its meaning. At any rate, 100 cores of grain would have been a large amount. The parable does not make clear why the reductions are different, but by reducing the amounts of the debt, the steward is hoping to gain favor. Remember, in the first century Mediterranean world, honor and shame played an important role. The rich man will not be able to reverse the steward's actions without losing face, and the steward has gained a debt of gratitude from each debtor that should endure their goodwill toward him in the future. One of the challenges when interpreting this parable is the steward's actions in reducing the debt. Here are three examples of various interpretations. One, some have suggested that the steward was simply removing his commission, so the owner would still be receiving what he was owed. Two, some have suggested that the steward was being righteous, because technically, according to Deuteronomy chapter 23, verses 19 and 20, collecting excessive interest from fellow Israelites was prohibited, though it did not apply to foreigners, that is, to Gentiles. And we have no way of knowing if the interest rate in this example was considered excessive. Three, the third option is that the steward was actually reducing the size of the debts. The problem with the first interpretation is that such an action would have been shrewd, but not dishonest. The owner would still get what he was owed. But in verse 8, the steward is called dishonest. The problem with the second interpretation is that there is no hint that either debtor felt that they were being abused by the interest. And indeed, we have no proof that there was any interest, let alone excessive interest, being charged. It is more likely that the steward's actions have caused the owner to lose money, so that once again, he has squandered the owner's resources, even as the steward gained favor. The steward is both shrewd and dishonest. At verses 8 through 13, it appears Luke has gathered other sayings of Jesus about possessions and included them here, similar to what Luke did at chapter 11, verses 1 through 13, where the subject of prayer was introduced and Luke joined a collection of Jesus' sayings on prayer. Here, the owner is commending the dishonest steward because he acted decisively in the face of coming judgment, not unlike what we are called to do. The steward is not being commended for his dishonesty, but for his shrewdness. Jesus' followers must not be naive. At verse 9 echoes Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, with the comment to be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Here, we are encouraged to remember that money, even if it is seen as evil, is to be used in a way that is oriented toward God's kingdom. Verses 10 through 12 make the point from lesser to greater, again, underscoring the importance of faithfulness, and the contrast between little and much is applied in two ways. At verse 11, if someone has not been faithful in worldly wealth, how can they be trusted with true riches? And at verse 12, the point is reinforced. Verse 13 has a parallel at Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, and reminds us that we cannot have divided loyalties. It's not just about wealth. but also idolatry. In conclusion, in our passage, we see a man go from being incompetent to being dishonest to being an example. A strange journey for sure. We may recall the story of Jacob, who deceives his father, cheats his brother, and makes off with most of his father-in-law's flock, and yet is the patriarch who fathers 12 sons who become the 12 tribes of Israel. While there is a the ends justify the means flavor to our story, this passage also lifts up how shrewdness can be a faithful use of resources. This concludes our study. Thank you for listening. Take care and God bless.